morning. It is time once again for the mighty JPCW Film Review Panel, or Roundtable, or whatever name we come up with it. I'm not sure. But anyway, leading with the Magnificent Seven, we have the Magnificent Three on our panel. They were only three, but they opined like they were 300. So, yes. We have Linda Jager. Good morning.
Good morning, Rick. Happy smoky morning to you.
Yes. And Katie Wayne with the Park City Film Series.
Good morning.
Get close to the mic. Yes. And Barbara Bratz.
Good morning,
Good
Rick.
Morning. Yes. Well, we just wanted to start off with our usual review of it's been a dry, hot summer, but has it been hot for films? I mean, what are the highlights and the lowlights of the last few months, even if it's only just seeing if the Sundance movies you liked, you know, made it out into the public and were accepted. Let's start with Linda, if we did.
Sure thing. Thanks, Rick. Yes, you mentioned the Sundance films were rolling out this summer a lot, which we saw during festival. So it was great to go see them in the theater. Some of my favorites were Won't You Be My Neighbor? Amazing. Loved it. RBG, which actually I think just had a showing on CNN now. So you can watch it there. Hearts Beat Loud, which I saw, and I liked it. I probably didn't like it as much as the other two, RBG and Will You Be My Neighbor. But most recently, I went to go see Crazy Rich Asians, which was completely not what I expected. It was awesome. Not that I was expecting it not to be good, but expecting sort of a different story, and it was fun, and it was bright, and it was a great story, very Cinderella-like, and my friend and I that went to see it, we just really enjoyed it, so... Mm-hmm. Those were some highlights.
Okay, now Crazy Rich Asians. That's kind of a sleeper hit in the late summer.
Mm-hmm. It certainly was. It was doing really well in the box office and definitely getting notoriety as it was the first all Asian cast since Joy Luck Club. And I am a new fan of Awkwafina, who is hysterical in the film, and she's a rapper that one of my kids was telling me about. So she was hysterical. She was really fun. So she calls herself, I think, the Asian Ellen. She's really funny.
Well, and Katie, you were mentioning that that you were getting around. Well, we'll do it the topic later of films out of our time zone. But you made it over to the Telluride Festival.
I did. Yeah. So part of my job, of course, is scouting films to bring back here to Park City. So certainly Sundance is a great place to do that. And then I get to go to the Telluride Film Festival, which is just a beautiful place to see films. And it's just a great location, and it's kind of fun to see how another town does their pop-up movie experience. Some are more comfortable than others. I would say we probably have better venues here for the Sundance Film Festival. I don't think I watched The White Crow, which is the new film about Rudolf Nureyev, the ballet dancer, which was amazing. But I watched it from the front row in the Opera House in Telluride, and I think I almost lost my lunch a couple times, a little dizzying to be that close. And then Ralph Fiennes was introducing the movie, and he was practically standing on top of me since I was right there, which was, you know, I wasn't complaining much about that, but I was really praying there would be no Q&A. I was like, I don't know if I could have all of them, like, standing it, like, on my lap. So, but yeah, it was fun. And so there were, I mean, just a fantastic slew of films. A lot of them are getting some Oscar buzz because they went on, of course, to the Toronto Film Festival. But it's always fun just to get out of your comfort zone, get into another mountain town, and get to experience films in a different place.
Yeah, and speaking of getting into the front row, I mean, how did you get into the front row of the Opera House? I know there's a fair wait period for those pictures. I mean,
well, being in the front row isn't always.
It's
the
really
best
not.
Seat
no,
in the house.
Yes, and in that Opera House, they also have side seats because this is a historic building, and everyone was complaining that you kind of have to origami yourself into these seats, and you'd see these very tall men just kind of looking at these seats like, oh, this was made for like a 1950s, probably small person that I am not. And so they, you know, looked very uncomfortable or behind a bar. And so it's interesting just to see that some of the places where you get to see films, which are fantastic, but, you know, it's only 200 seats. And so, as you said, you're lucky to get them. With Telluride, it's different than Sundance in that most people buy an all-access pass. And so you just end up waiting in line. You get your, what they call queues, but your wait list ticket, and you have to wait in line like we used to have to, yeah. I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago.
But the weather's, it's a lot nicer in that weather.
People are picnicking. They're, you know, because it's Colorado, they're drinking wine and eating brownies and, you know, having little snacks before
and
what
kind of brownies?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, this was, and you get to see people. I mean, I sat next to, or standing in line next to Steve James. For a movie called The Biggest Little Farm. And it was just great to hear him chatting about movies he'd seen and, you know, what he was excited about seeing coming up and, you know, kind of eavesdropping on some of these movie notables.
Well, the atmosphere is a little less, it's not quite as frenzied as Sundance.
It's much smaller. I mean, it's tiny. Yeah. And it's a curated festival, which is interesting. So Sundance, of course, is a juried festival, and we don't know anything about these films when they come in. So it's kind of like, you know, Forrest Gump, you're like, you never know what you're going to get. And which is kind of the joy. I think some of the best films I've seen at Sundance are the ones that I was like, meh, okay, that's my 10th ticket. I'll do that one. It fits in my time slot. And so you don't really know. Wild Tales was one of those out of Argentina a few years ago. And it was my favorite film. And I saw that in the front row at the Mark, and it was fine. Because you're not up on top of the screen. But at Telluride, they basically cherry pick films, mostly not from Sundance. It's rare that they have a Sundance film, actually. But from the various festivals. Most of them already have distribution. And these are the films that they think are kind of the cream of the crop for the year, and most of them go on to win Academy Awards. This year they had intentionally chose more films from female filmmakers, so that was certainly a criticism out of the Cannes Film Festival that there weren't as many female filmmakers represented as well as at Venice. And so at Telluride they said, let's make sure we get more of these films in the mix, and they were fantastic. I mean, it's a great, great selection, but it's, you see kind of, you know, I ran into the Sundance people, and you see people from other film festivals there, and it's, there are a lot of celebrities, but it's more.
So there's a small circle of people you know that you run into and say, hey, how you doing?
Right, exactly. And you think, you know, this is kind of, you know, the kind of well-heeled film goers, you know, at Telluride. It's quite expensive to be there, but there's still, you know, that kind of fangirl, fanboy element to all of us. You know, Hugh Jackman gets on stage anywhere and everyone's instantly like, oh, it's Hugh Jackman. I've got to see him, you know, men, women alike. It's just, so there are some of those celebrities that everyone kind of goes crazy for. But otherwise, you know, it's kind of like being in New York. No one really wants to let on that they, right, don't freak out when you see someone super famous. You're like, oh, yes, Ryan, I loved your film. Fantastic.
Leonard Maltin. Oh, Leonard, yes. Love your book.
But it's good. It's just people that love film. And so you hang out in the lines because it's warm and the weather's nice. You know, just chit-chat about films like we're doing here, which is, you know, kind of fun.
Okay, well, before we move on to Barbara, just any other memorable pictures from this year's?
Well, films that we will be bringing in that I saw there, because I said most of them have distribution. There's only one, I think, that didn't this year, which is unusual. But Free Solo by Alex Honnold, free soloing El Capitan. Unbelievable. And I thought going in, oh, it's just going to be one of those sports docs. I mean, kind of cool that he did this. But you really get to know him as a person. And they just, it's the same directors, Jimmy Chin and Elizabeth Varkarai, who did Maru. So the cinematography is amazing. And you are just, even though you know the outcome, or if you know the outcome, you are just nail-biting the whole time. I mean, just seeing this man, free solo, which means climbing without ropes, up this enormous pitch. And just, I mean, it's terrifying. The cinematography is just, you're like, your heart is in your throat the entire time. So we'll definitely be bringing that, and it's an incredible film. Shoplifters, which is out of Japan, which did quite well at the Cannes Film Festival, was one that I loved. It's about a family who are, just kind of down on their luck and shoplift, and they use these children to shoplift from these various stores. But it's also the story about family and how they've kind of come together, these unusual kind of pairings of people that come together in dire circumstances. But just beautiful storytelling on that one. The White Crow about Ruf Nureyev. This young dancer plays Nureyev, and he's incredible. So if you love the ballet and a good story. And then, of course, one that people have been hearing a lot about is First Man, the Neil Armstrong biopic with Ryan Gosling. And Boy Erased with Lucas Hedges, which is a gay conversion therapy story. And Lucas Hedges is amazing. I mean, if you've seen him in Manchester by the Sea, you know that this young man has an incredible talent. And it's just, he brings you into the story. It's just so believable. He inhabits that story so strongly. And Nicole Kidman's in it, and Russell Crowe. And it's probably one of the best films that I've seen. And that was one of the ones that everyone was talking about at festival. But it's interesting. It hasn't been one that they've talked about as much for the awards. The biopic about Neil Armstrong, I think, is a stronger contender, but you know, we're not all about the awards here. We're about the story and good acting.
Yeah. And Barbara.
Well, I want to mention too quickly that were my favorites out of Sundance, but I know folks are going to get another chance to see them because they're coming to the film series, and that's Three Identical Strangers, which is coming up later this month. Really wonderful, incredible documentary. And then Eighth Grade, which was really one of my sleeper favorites. I had no clue what it was going to be about going in, and it's really a wonderful film. So don't miss it when it comes to the film series. Katie, are there any others I didn't mention that you know about that's on their schedule?
No, we'll actually be scheduling out our films next week for the rest of the, well, for November, end of October into November. We schedule about 6 weeks out. So we'll have All In, which is a ski movie. And then we'll kind of go into the rest of our season. But yes, I mean, it's always fun to see these films come from Sundance. I mean, What Would You Be My Neighbor, which we started with, it was great to hear other people say, oh, I didn't get to see it during festival, and now we can bring it back. But it's been an incredible summer and kind of season. Usually fall is a little bit of a dry season for films. But it's, you know, box office records have been way better than they have been in years past, which is nice. So more people are going to movies. They say that cinema's dead because of streaming, but that's not it's not correct. If you heard Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me earlier, they were saying how people, you know, tend to move into some of these new fancy movie theaters. So we don't do that at the Santee. We don't want you to move in. you cannot lounge. You cannot recline in our chairs. But you can bring your own popcorn bowl.
Yes, I did. I think I went to the Century 16 to months ago to see Shape of Water, and it was like one of these football lounge chairs. While we got some time, Barbara, talk a little about Three Identical Strangers and the story there. And I had this theory sometimes about interesting documentaries, are they made or do they happen? I mean, you could be the most skilled filmmaker, but it's also that you stumble on the most incredible or amazing stories sometimes.
Right, and my first answer was going to be they're made because they happen. Mm-hmm. But in this case, Leslie and I got to interview the director, which I'm forgetting his name at the moment, and he said there had been several attempts to tell this story before they had the successful project with this one. And, you know, the story is one that's just so incredible, and you think you know the story if I would give you, in a nutshell, what it's about, and then it goes so many levels deeper in why it happened. And they just did such an excellent job in retelling the story. I was at the premiere here, and again, not having a clue what I was going into, because I didn't know even the beginning of the story, there was not a dry eye in the house. It really impacted everyone so deeply. So I definitely would check it out when you get the chance to see it.
Hmm. Yeah, and I have a question for Katie. It's, speaking of Sundance Pictures, you know, appearing later in the mainstream, and there's one of my favorite Sundance Pictures from last January, and I haven't heard about it, but have you heard anything of the picture called Arizona? Is that out there? Or
No, I haven't. I haven't heard that one.
Interesting. That's the premise of that one is it's a thriller with a somewhat comic and social overtones. That this was the one about the Danny McBride who can be both funny and despicable, and is a guy who is pissed off at his real estate agent and actually accidentally kills the agent and the woman
accidentally on purpose.
Yes.
Ooh, sorry.
Well, I think it was Josh Rogan or something knocks him off a balcony, and the woman at the center of the story accidentally sees this and McBride just panics, knots her out, drags her away, and keeps saying, I'm a good person, I really am, but he just keeps doing more and more horrible things.
Was he tweeting that, or did he actually say it?
I think he just about says that, and it just gets worse and worse. But the backdrop of this is the aftermath of it's set in one of these Arizona planned gated communities that are dead because of the 2008-09 crash. That's it. Yep. And the And so it's like a chase in a ghost town. Only the ghost town is the modern subdivision that's dead because of the economic housing crash. And I just wondered if you could talk the Park City Board of Realtors into sponsoring this picture.
Kind of like 99 Homes, I think.
It would be considered for them a triple X rated horror movie.
Exactly. What not to do to your real estate agent.
Yes,
you love us.
Their mortgage went south. Oh, they have a security guard, but he has nothing to do. Oh, my God. Frightening. Okay. Well, we'll be back with we'll talk about movies out of your time zone when we return.
This is Beth, owner of Peak Art and Frame, local sponsors of Cool Science Radio on KPCW. Locally owned and operated, Peak Art and Frame offers local artwork as well as digital printing, custom framework, and mirrors. Open Monday through Saturday and located in the Walmart Shopping Center, 649-0801 or peakartandframe.com.
This is Travis Vernon, fly fishing coordinator of JANS and longtime supporter of KPCW. Our fly fishing department and guide service is open year-round and offers a full line of flies and product, including brands like Sims, Sage, and Fishpond. We also rent rods, reels, and waders. Available at the flagship store on Park Avenue, 649-4949 or JANS.com.
With our Saturday film panel roundtable, somebody said this Rick and the Fletchettes or something. But you know,
that's with two X's, like the chat.
Yes. Sometimes it's fun to see movies in a locale away from your regular home, and sometimes even develop a certain favorite spot to go to that's, you know, just thousands of miles away. Linda, you brought this up several months back, but you have a spot on the East Coast.
Yeah, I actually have a couple. You're born and raised on the East Coast, and travel quite often to Cape Ann, Massachusetts, which is north of Boston. And stumbled upon a great little theater called Cape Ann Cinema in Gloucester, Massachusetts. And it sits on top of an independent record store. And you climb up the stairs, and they have, I think, three screening rooms. The largest is decked out in a variety of different couches that people donate. And you can great concessions and, you know, different coffee mugs that people donate. You know, you just feel like you're at someone's house, and you just kind of sit back. I saw the death of Stalin there when I was back this spring. And I was actually there last month and wanted to go see Three Identical Strangers on a rainy day. Mm. Got there right at screening time and was sold out because it was so small. And it's just great. I mean, you just feel, I think, you know, as we have the gift of the Park City Film Series here, it's such a great opportunity to travel and be like a local. And, you know, it's just you get to immerse yourself and meet locals and just a different environment. So I really, really enjoy that one. And my other was Lincoln Plaza Cinemas on the Upper West Side in New York. And I discovered that one day a couple of years ago. I had some time to kill before getting on a plane to come back. And it was right when The Social Network was coming out. And I just Googled to see what was nearby, and I went there, and it wasn't actually the film. It was a documentary about Steve Jobs, but still, it was a great little theater. So downstairs, you know, small theaters, just kind of getting away from the norm. Unfortunately, that theater recently closed. They lost their lease, and it was beloved by many, and I think there's some organizations in New York that are trying to revive it and kind of find a new home for it.
That would be nice. And It sounds like, you know, as if you were going to movies at the Elks Lodge on Main Street or something.
Exactly. Sitting around the couches. Exactly. And there is one other in Rockport, Mass, where I vacation in the summer and on Cape Ann. They do have an old Elks Lodge building that they do just program films in the summer during their peak season. And several years ago, I saw The Proposal, which was actually filmed in Rockport, Massachusetts, not Sitka, Alaska. But we got to see it right when it was released among all the locals who, they're, you know, that's their hometown, and it was featured. So that was a really cool experience.
Mm. And Barbara, do you have any little favorite home away from a movie theater away from home?
Well, you know, I took a different direction with my answer. It still qualifies as out of the time zone.
Yeah.
But for 12 years, I lived in Germany. And while there, I went to a local theater, a German theater, to see both Schindler's List and Saving Private Ryan. And so seeing those particular movies with a German audience surrounding you was really a moving experience in a lot of ways. And one of the things, it's very traditional, or it used to be 20-some years ago, that they would pause a movie midway through to sell refreshments and kind of spoil the climax quite often. But anyway, out of respect for the subject material of both of these movies, the management announced ahead of time that there would be no pause, there would be no break. And so we saw the movie in its entirety, and it was really very inspiring, awesome, moving to get up and walk out of that theater with an absolute silent crowd, you know, other than the quiet crying that you would hear. And we were obviously Americans, so a few people that made eye contact with us. It was just really powerful sharing moment of those two subjects. So it wasn't so much the theater as the subject matter in a different environment.
Yeah, and that's still a good answer. Not just, you know, some theater you went to regularly, but maybe just a one shot experience. Which, and I bet, you know, you see those pictures now, and you think of seeing those films in Germany.
Yes, and it takes you right back there to how everybody had that same moment. You know, we've all been maybe at a presentation of a film where we all have had a moment just relating to what we saw on the screen, and that was never so obvious to me as seeing that film in either of those films in Germany.
Yeah, and Katie, do you have a regular home away from home theater, or as like Barbara said, it could even be just a memorable one-shot experience?
Sure. Well, two comments. Actually, I was in Auschwitz when they were filming Schindler's List, which was an incredible, incredible experience and very disorienting at the same time because I didn't know that they were actually shooting it, but you would see all the cast members walking around and had this very surreal experience. You're like, is this Colonial Williamsburg? Like, this is so horrifying. And then you realize they're shooting a movie and you're like, oh, thank goodness. This is not, they're not pretending to be guards and prisoners
it's not like a Pioneer Village
where
Smith talks to you about what he's doing and you go up to the Nazi guard and he's
That was kind of the horrifying thought first and you're like, please tell me this is not what I think it is, and of course it was not. So that it was interesting to then see the movie, obviously.
Auschwitz theme park, one of the all-time bad ideas.
No, that would be the worst idea. A couple kind of great memories for me is I always like seeing movies in unusual places. So one of my fondest memories is seeing The Bad News Bears as a drive-in in the Hamptons, biking up there with my mom and my brother and seeing the movie as a kid. Oh, it's great. Hot summer night. I love the East Coast for that. Just, you know, it can be boiling hot during the day and then it's still, you can still wear a t-shirt at night. And then when I was in high school, I went to boarding school in New Hampshire, and there was the Ioka Theater, which was a kind of an old rundown classic theater with the classic marquee in the center of town. And a friend of mine and I, our senior year, had a standing date every Monday night to go see whatever was playing. So I've seen a lot of B movies there, but it was just fun. And we just, you know, would get snacks and watch movies. And whenever I go to a new city, I always like to try and just find an unusual art house and pop in. And, you know, some of them are, like Linda said, just, you know, old buildings that were recreated and reimagined as a theater, and some are just old theaters that are still hanging on. There are less and less of those nowadays. Yeah. But it's always fun, of course, and then at Telluride at the festivals, just to see what they've made into a theater. They convert one of their ice rinks into the Herzog Theater, which probably has the best sound. It has Atmos sound, so it's a lot like going to see a movie at the Eccles, but has the best sight lines. But because it has a metal roof, one year it was pouring down rain. And so before the movie started, it was just that thunderous sound of rain, which I love that sound. And then suddenly the movie started and you're wondering, is this going to be able to overcome the elements? And of course it did, but it was, you just feel like you're a little in a little cocoon and just kind of surrounded by the movie, which is nice, kind of all enveloping.
Yeah. And just coming back from the Park City Road Tour, which stopped in Jackson. So Jackson Hole, had a couple of memories for me. One was a one-shot experience where the first time I ever saw Casablanca in its entirety was some little tent theater that they had set up near the Jackson Teton Resort. And for some reason, I just went to see Casablanca there. And with a little folding chair that was... I was on the ground, so it wasn't entirely level. I think we're kind of sitting like this through. And then when the Germans invade Paris, a big gust of wind hit the tent. And, whoa, hey, the Nazis are here. Bogart and Bergman have to flee, you know, that kind of thing. The other interesting my family used to go up to Jackson. It was just like the regular summer vacation, just a couple of days. And so you would go to the small town theater, the Teton, which was a big, bulky, built of nice big solid rocks and stone, Katie said, you'd see whatever was there. So sometimes it was. Sometimes it was memorable, like Steve McQueen and the Sand Pebbles, and sometimes maybe not so. You know, George Hamilton as Evel Knievel, not great, but it's one of those sad cases of a theater going dark now. Several years ago, they told me this story: the guy who leased the theater got into some squabble with the family that owned the property, so the theater went dark for several years, and it's just what they needed was some nonprofit, some Katie or Randy Barton or something to turn the theater into something active again. But I guess it was bought by a pizzeria. So they have the pizzeria has kept the marquee and the box office kiosk in front. They kept that, but you go in and you have just a regular old pizza in a place with, for some reason, very tall ceilings.
There's a great theater in Portland, Oregon that they're not allowed to serve food in, but they wanted to have pizza, and they're right next door to a pizza place. So they created what they call the pie hole. Oh. So they cut a hole in the wall and you can get your pizza and then go see your movie. So maybe they could add movies to the pizza place.
Sure.
Saying. Yeah, could be another one. I
hope so. The audiences in in Cape Cod, are they just kind of your normal audience, or are they a little weird?
No, they're on. Absolutely,
it's Cape Cod.
Cape Ann, which is the lesser crowded version of Cape Cod. No, it's, as I said before, it's just local, great locals, and a great way to get to know locals. And and that experience, as I said, when I had watched The Proposal, to be able to chat with all these folks that had their town featured and look like Alaska. It was really fun to just, chat afterwards. I love the experience, and I love film, so I'd love to work that into vacation whenever I can.
Yeah, it's nice when the picture you happen to see is it kind of fits with the locale. In the Jackson Hole Theater once, that they showed Richard Harrison Man in the Wilderness, which was a previous version of the Leo DiCaprio story, The Revenant. The mountain man gets mauled by a bear and amazingly survives. And showing that in Jackson Hole country, which is kind of the heart of those old mountain man days, That was very appropriate.
Well, my hometown back in Indiana happens to have a period authentic wooden grandstand. And so we were selected as the home of the Rockford Peaches for a league of their own. And I wasn't home that summer, but my dad was one of the extras in the stands. And when I came home at Christmas, he said he really didn't know what all that fuss about that little Madonna girl was, because she just looked like a schoolgirl to him.
Well, we always joke here that if we ever have movie, if there's ever a movie of people freezing on the side of a mountain, it'll do well in Park City. So.
Yeah, well, they did have one of these days we'll talk about it's a Sundance picture called Frozen, which was about the three kids that are stranded on a
chairlift.
On a chairlift.
Wasn't that filmed here? I mean, not here in Park City, but at Snowbird or somewhere.
I'm not sure if it was filmed there, but it was. The premises are some little East Coast a ski resort that like closes on a Sunday and then doesn't open until Friday. So these kids, unless they can figure a way out, are stuck on the chairlift for 5 days.
This sounds a little bit like the real estate movie. It's like, yeah. I don't want to watch that. Like, that's my nightmare. No.
A theme weekend. Yeah. Horror movies.
The horror movie for those in the know.
Like. Oh, the lift operators forget they're there. Oh, yeah. Well, let's see if we can come back in just a minute and we can talk the future of the Oscars and a particular change that's been proposed for the Oscars. We'll be right back with that.
Hi, I'm Doug Wells.
And I'm Renee Bodley. Join us Monday morning for Mountain Money.
We'll talk about making money, spending money, and investing it wisely.
Plus, how today's business trends affect you, our listeners in Summit and Wasatch County.
Join us at 9 a.m. Monday, right after NPR News.
Sponsored in part by Mountain West Bank, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Park City Chamber Bureau, Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough, and Columbus Pacific Development with Viridian and Apex Residences.
Hi, I'm Chris Hadley of Jones Waldo's Park City office. Jones Waldo has been serving our great state since 1875 and supporting this great station since 2007. Jones Waldo provides legal counsel to our local, regional, and national clients in areas such as real estate, corporate, intellectual property, and more. We are located in Kimball Junction and at joneswaldo.com.
You're gonna be popular. I'll teach you the proper poise when you talk to boys. Little ways to flirt and glance. I'll show you what shoes to wear, how to fix your hair, everything that really counts to be popular. I'll help you be popular. You'll hang with the right cohorts. You'll be good at sports. Know the slang you've got to know. So let's start, because you've got an awfully long way to go.
Welcome back to the film panel. And we had to use that as an intro. It's all about being popular, because that was a big discussion with the Oscars over the summer. There was a suggestion put forth that they might come up with an award for the popular movie of the year. And this would be its theme song. But I just wanted to throw that out to our panel. And what did you think of that idea? I guess that there's worries that, you know, that people are not getting very interested in the Oscars anymore. So maybe we better give, you know, an award for the popular film of the year. So let's say, Katie, how'd that strike you?
Well, someone that runs an independent art house, not very well, since our metric is not what's going to sell the most tickets necessarily, or what's performed the best at the box office, obviously is a consideration, because that has some relationship to critical acclaim, obviously, and, you know, how the movie, you know, will, you know, has put, been put together. But the idea that you would just put dollars ahead of merit that really financial viability, because a lot of these movies, I mean, we've all, you know, been subject to seeing a movie where it's got a great cast and it's got a great director and an interesting storyline, and you see it based on that premise and it's terrible. Mm-hmm. So it will do well. I mean, I would say there are a lot of movies within the Star Wars kind of franchise that, you know, hit that mark where, you know, you go because you have this somewhat nostalgic relationship to it, but it's not a great movie. And so to say, oh, it's the box office, and particularly in this year when Black Panther did enormously well, and it will probably be, it would probably have been the one of the films that would be kind of in that contention, but it's also a really artistically well-done film. So it actually hit both marks. And to say, well, it's not based on merit, it's really just dollars. But, you know, let's consider, but it should be considered on its merit. And so it seems particularly unfair in this year of films that we've had so many great films that have been, you know, hitting somewhat of a niche market, but have done very well at the box office, and we're, you know, hopefully will win a lot of awards, not just for acting, but directing, costume design. I mean, just so many other criteria that based on its merits alone, it should also be considered.
And I think reportedly, I think that the makers of Black Panther were not crazy about the idea because they didn't want to get the idea, oh, we'll get an award for just because we're the popular movie.
Well, it kind of cheapens it, doesn't it? Yeah. I mean, it's like you're like, oh, you get it not because, you know, you actually have talent, but because you didn't, you know, you're financially successful. You look good, but, you know.
Well, and especially if it eliminates it from contention for Best Picture. I mean, I don't think it should be exclusive, but.
It's the miscongeniality of the Oscars.
Exactly.
Yes.
But to me, it's also, it's not really, is that a voting thing? I mean, if you're looking at popularity, aren't you looking at ticket sales and box office? And so it seems to me like that would be your automatic criteria, not a vote from the Academy. So I don't really see that as a voting category.
Right. Well, then anything on Netflix, of course, Netflix doesn't report its numbers. So you have no idea. Those are automatically disqualified, where some of those films have done quite well. And there are increasingly more films like Roma, which was at a lot of the film festivals this fall. Everyone is raving over it, but it'll be released on the Netflix platform. So it's actually one I didn't see when I was at Telluride because I was like, I can't get it. So I would like to see it, but like everyone else, I'll see it on Netflix.
Yeah. And the popular Oscar, I mean, it's not very fair to the film on the other side of the equation. If the film wins the Best Picture award, is that, that's the one that's the art house, you know, go ahead and eat your vegetables. well done picture, and so they get, you know, that image stuck to them.
But right. They always get the bump, you know. Those films get the Oscar bump, so they'll get, you know, people that normally wouldn't go to see that film because it won. They'll get that additional audience. So I think they're taken care of. But I agree, it's just, you know, we have those award shows, People's Choice Awards and what others, that can honor the popular popular films. But again, it was a ratings-driven, you know, an idea to get more ratings, and thankfully they shot it down. So
you would think with all of these talented filmmakers, they might be able to produce a good two-hour show. I don't know.
And I hear they're also doing some more off-site awards to cut the show down to 3 hours, to keep it 3 hours again in an attempt to keep ratings. So.
Right. Which is also kind of a shame because you think about the people that do win awards for costume design and set design. And I mean, all these things that go into making a movie what it is, you know, the pieces that bring it together and make you believe it. It's not just the acting. It's not just the screenplay. I mean, obviously, those are important elements, but there's a craft. I mean, there's a whole city of people down in LA and, you know, in other parts of the country where, you know, they're doing some of the smaller details. But if you see a film where there's a continuity error, right? That it makes a difference. Like, it kind of breaks you out of the story. That's someone's job, is to make sure that doesn't happen. And, you know, they should be recognized. People who do that well, you know, anyone at the height of their craft, I think, should be recognized. Yeah. So it is a shame, but I obviously understand why.
And then it just happens that, you know, some years there is the kind of a horse race element that comes to the fore, that in a particular year there seems to be the one kind of movie versus the other. For instance, 1982, Gandhi versus E.T. So some pictures kind of get this image that they're the Gandhi movie, which is, you know, it's well made, well performed, deals unquestionably with some serious topic, but, you know, you've seen it once, that you don't need to ever see it again. I don't know, some people would see Gandhi again, but, you know, there are those kind of pictures. But I was I wanted to give you guys a pop quiz. And,
is there a prize?
It's an opinion. But go down to the some recent best pitcher winners and see if you guys can tell me, do you think this was a it's a respectable movie, of course, because it won an Oscar, but it is. Do you think it was also a popular film with audiences? And did it bridge that gap? Was it popular and respected? So
Judging popular by box office?
Objective box office, or at least to your experience, do you think audiences, liked it? This year, just jump in and say yes, no. This year the winner was Shape of Water.
No.
I loved that movie.
I agree.
You loved it.
People thought it was bizarre, the monster movie. Yeah. But I loved it. Yeah. I love Guillermo del Toro. But it takes a certain sensibility. I mean, I think that's what I liked about it, was that it was different than kind of your normal Hollywood fare. And that it won, to me, I think was a nice kind of a nod to the artistry of film, and that it doesn't have to be something that is popular, right? Yeah, that is kind of the same old, because I think that's what's taking people away from movies, is that it's like the same formula, just retold slightly differently. It's the same story.
You probably don't have this in front of you, but do you remember what the other contenders were with Shape of Water? Which one would have been the popular film for last year? We'll have to check on that.
I guess it was Dunkirk and Finest Hour,
a lot this year.
Mm-hmm. The year before, La La Land. Oh wait, oh, no.
No, no, I was going to say, yes. And they're up again. They're up against each other again this year. Barry Jenkins and Damien Chazelle for First Man and What Beale Street Could Do.
Oh yeah, What Beale Street.
Yeah,
if Beale Street Could Talk, Damien Chazelle will come up on top this time.
Yeah, so was that like that? You know, they give the award to the prom queen, and they said, "Oh, wait," they took it away and gave it to the president of the AV Club.
Well, I feel like now when they get the best picture, if I was, the director, I'd go and be like, "Can I see the card, please?" Yeah. Okay, thank you. Here's the proof.
Yeah. Okay, the year before that, Spotlight.
Moonlight, I would say, was way better. Yeah. Than La La Land.
I like La La Land definitely had the popular appeal. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But investigative journalists investigating,
Yeah, that was a great story. I loved it personally. I mean, it was a tough movie to watch, but I don't know. That one's kind of on the fence. I think probably got a bump from the Oscar, but I'm not sure box office wise. What do you think? Yeah.
Again, I think I have to see the other contenders. If we could see all the contenders, then I could go, boom, that was the more popular movie.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the cast definitely carried it for the popular, there were familiarity there.
Okay. Yeah. Year before that, Birdman. Do you think it was popular to see Michael Keaton and his tidy whities?
I vote no.
Yeah, I'd say no.
No.
Yeah, that was a little weird. Uh-huh. I mean, the movie was weird. Not that Barbara was here.
It just doesn't have broad audience appeal, is what I would say.
Okay. Year before that, 12 Years a Slave. Gandhi movie?
Again, it's hard without seeing the other contenders. Yeah. I think then it would be easy to say, well, this was probably
the other one would have been more popular or better received. Yeah, it's hard to tell.
I'll say this is a Gandhi movie. I think it fits the qualifications. But if people order up on their streaming, if they go to a movie about antebellum slavery, I think they're going to order up Django Unchained instead of this. The year before that, Argo.
I didn't see it.
Rescuing the hostages in Tehran.
Yeah,
I'd
say no.
It's one best picture. I wonder if people will remember it, because I mean, I kept thinking the best picture for that year was Lincoln. And and which was a contender that year, and for some reason the Spielberg's picture is maybe at least for me it's sticking in my mind more than Argo, and the year before that, The Artist. whether, you know, art house or, I mean, does anybody remember that picture?
I remember the acceptance. Adventure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And let's see, the before that, the King's Speech.
I think that would have been popular.
Yeah, I agree. I think
that would have been popular. That was a good...
That was a great film.
I think that was an accessible film. It's an interesting story. I think it touches on some of the notes that you would like, that it has a little bit of intellectual weight to it, but that it's more accessible. I mean, it's hard, you know, with some of these films that they are important, right? I think Moonlight is an important film. It's a story that should be told and that should be getting out into, you know, the general discourse. But it's a hard movie to watch. And so it's hard when you think about Best Picture being popular. I don't know if it necessarily needs to be popular to be the best picture. But yeah, so it's interesting. And so, you know, people kind of take, it's like they're taking their medicine sometimes. But those are the films I like. So I think for some people, it's not like, ooh, I want to see that really difficult, challenging movie. But, you know, those tend to be the films I like to see.
Yeah, eat your vegetables.
Yes, dark foreign films are my, really were my go-to. It's dark if it's in a different language. Maybe someone dies tragically, you know.
Yes, it's very, very tragic in its own subtitles.
Lots of Jane Eyre stories.
Yeah, okay. two more examples before this. And Hurt Locker, just respectable or popular, too?
I think that would have been popular in its time. What year was that?
Yeah, I don't remember.
Not too long ago.
Yeah.
It was military-oriented,
But I feel like at that time, people were really gravitating, because it was one of the first type of those films I think we were seeing.
And I think it doesn't help the film if any of us say, I don't remember.
When? What?
It was less than 10 years. But here's one that was popular that year, a Slumdog Millionaire.
Oh, that was a good movie.
That was a great movie.
That's a yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, let's see if the master of our fates, Monica, signals that we have time, we'll get into just one more topic before the top of the hour, and that is just wanted to look back, and we've played a few musical selections, kind of looking back at two people that were very very important to the movies, especially back in the 70s, and one was Neil Simon. Who was, of course, more important in terms of his contribution to the live theater, to the Broadway stage, but had a great many movies made from his plays. I can't remember any play he wrote that they didn't make into a film eventually, but. In terms of Neil Simon, Linda, you know, any highlights for you in terms of what he did for the screen?
Well, I, you know, just remember in the 70s as a kid seeing a few, Good Bye Girl, one that stood out. But now I think, you know, great storyteller. And again, I think more prominent on the Broadway stage than definitely took it to film theater, to movie theaters. But good story. So. Well, he'll be missed.
Barbara?
Well, I don't know if I've seen enough of his movies to pick out a worst. And Linda's mentioned Goodbye Girl, which was definitely my favorite. And I just want to recall a scene from that. And that was when Richard Dreyfuss made the phone call in the pouring rain from the phone booth across the street from the apartment and made her aware that he'd left his guitar and that signaled that he was coming back. So that was my favorite scene from the movie.
Yeah. And I think, too, right around that time, The Sunshine Boys, I remember going to see that with my dad. That was a good one.
Yeah. The 70s was a good time for actors to win Oscars off of Neil Simon performances because, you know, The Sunshine Boys, George Burns recreated his career after Gracie, you know, became a popular solo performer, and Richard Dreyfuss. The Oscars, when they said, and the winner is Richard, and everybody thought they'd say Burton, and they said, no, Dreyfuss. So, Katie, in terms of Neil Simon on film, anything?
Well, I mean, as a New Yorker, how can you not love Neil Simon? But Biloxi Blues is one that always sticks out with Matthew Broderick. But yeah, I mean, it's, I kind of know him more from his theater. Just as a kid growing up, you know, in theater class, you were always reading Neil Simon plays, seemingly, and acting scenes out. So I think it lends itself well. I mean, there's just an accessibility to his plays that were somewhat timeless. I mean, growing up in the 70s and 80s, there were still plays that we could relate to, that they weren't so kind of out there, but obviously were, you know, different than Shakespeare, which was obviously a little less accessible and harder to perform, but something that you could modernize and, you know, really relate to the story. And that's what I like about the films that have been based off of his screenplays, is that they do lend, you know, they're able to connect to modern times, even though certainly they were set a couple decades before the present day.
And early on in 67, he brought us Robert Redford with Barefoot in the Park. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So we have him to thank for that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And this year is the last year for Robert Redford as an actor.
Yeah.
So he will be debuting his last film, Old Man and the Gun, which is just coming out, I believe, this fall. But it was just premiered at some of the film festivals in the fall. So it's kind of sad to think he'll still remain as a director, he's saying, but this will be his last acting performance as an actor.
We'll see if he keeps doing Sundance press conferences.
That's right, a little bookend there.
I'm glad you mentioned Biloxi Blues. I think that's kind of an underrated Neil Simon picture because of the central performance of the mercurial, volatile character of the sergeant, played by Christopher Walken in all his glory, with a Neil Simon script. So, just have to look back a little bit to Burt Reynolds, and you know, I know Burt. Like I said, I'm not going to get a debate, but, you know, which one is worse, Cannonball Run 2 or Stroker Ace? But,
you know, I'm proud to say I haven't seen either one of them.
Do you think when he was smoky that he thought he'd be in Boogie Nights? Yeah. That's my other question.
That was my favorite, though. Yeah. I mean, that was such a great performance, and nice to see him come back, and it's such an interesting role.
Yeah, but he's such a classic. I mean, he is one of those icons. I know his career took a dip for a while, but just that he was able to end on a high note, I think, is pretty impressive.
And Deliverance, which is, I think one of his great entries on screen as an actor, and occasionally he tried to do the formula of one for them, one for me. So he'd do Smokey and the Bandit, but he would also do Starting Over or something with Jill Clayburgh and Candace Bergen revealing herself as a comic actress, and things like that. Randy Barton mentioned The Man Who Loved Women, a remake of Truffaut. So Bert had his moments. So I think that I'm afraid we got to Boogie Night, Boogie out of here. That's the end of it. And want to thank Monica Goodner for keeping us all organized and on time and all that good stuff. So we'll be back in early December, try to look at Christmas pictures, and we'll know what's coming to Sundance. We'll get the mighty round table back together again. This is KPCW Park City.
Wake up to the Marketplace Morning Report every weekday at 6:50 and 7:50 during the morning news with Leslie Thatcher. Brought to you in part by Big D Construction, DeJuria Center at High Star Ranch, and ESCO Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electrical. That's ESCO, ESCO.
Hi, this is Bob Richer, chairperson of the KPCW Board of Trustees. We created the Broadcasters Club, and thanks to you, it's been a terrific success. We continue to strive to enhance our local news coverage, provide informative community-based journalism, and serve as your voice of the Wasatch Back. KPCW plays a special role in defining the place we all love. Thanks for your help and support.
For more information about becoming a Broadcasters Club member, please contact Jennifer at 649-9004, extension 30. Or Jennifer at kpcw.org.